Sherry Fink is an award-winning journalist and nonfiction author. She is also the keynote speaker for the Disasters, Ethics, and Social Justice Conference taking place at the University at Albany on Friday in the ballroom in the campus center. She will be speaking and giving the keynote address. She's a New York Times correspondent and the author of the best-selling book, 5 Days at Memorial, Life and Death in a Storm-Ravaged Hospital, about choices made in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. The book won the National Book Critics Circle Award and the Los Angeles Times Book Prize. Again, she will be at the University at Albany on Friday afternoon, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You will be speaking at this Disasters, Ethics, and Social Justice Conference. What is the message you want to get across?
Just that disasters are situations, disasters and emergencies of all sorts are situations where ethical dilemmas, ethical conundrums are really brought into sharp relief. And I think these are things that are with us all the time, but we really see them very clearly in disasters. And the key is to talk about these difficult issues before we ever face them. It's really part of preparedness. It's part of our society being able to come out of an emergency, whatever that is, a tornado, an earthquake, a storm, bad winter storm, coming out of that as strong as possible with our, societal trust intact. And so I think one of the most obvious examples of that would be something called triage, which you may have heard in the medical context before, but right. When you boil it down, it's really about when resources don't seem to be, around in as many resources as you might need to treat people, for example, in the midst of a terrible crisis. Who gets those resources? Who doesn't get those resources? How do we decide? Who makes those decisions? And most importantly of all, how can we avoid ever having to make those? How can we prepare better or think, creatively in the midst of a disaster to avoid having to make those really tough choices? So those are some of the things I'm going to be talking about at this really exciting new program that the university has.
I certainly understand what you're saying. And my first question, though, is going to be, how do you plan, how do you have a triage plan even for the unthinkable?
Well, part of my, passion is to get people thinking about the unthinkable. Mm. This is a very human impulse, which is to not think about the worst case scenario. It's very depressing to think about, what are the range of disasters that are the most likely to hit where I live? What is the most likely emergency that I might face, whether it's, a fire or a pandemic, like a bad flu, depending on who you are, what position you're in, what your medical needs are, there may be different things that you want to think about. And it is important to think about that. For example, if you are a person who requires medicines for a chronic condition, diabetes, high blood pressure, anything like that, how will you make sure that you have access to those medicines in a disaster? Do you have your medical records with you? Do you have a plan for, how to take things with you or where you'll go for care, where you go for dialysis if your own dialysis center is closed? It's just things like that. I'm throwing out some examples. But the point is, think about it in advance, game it out a little bit, and particularly if you're a hospital, if you're a doctor's office, if you're a school or one of the key pillars of our society that really serve the society's needs, particularly in a time of crisis, how can that organization or the infrastructure, the buildings, be made more resistant to emergencies, to disasters of various sorts?
One of the things that we saw during Katrina is, and what you just mentioned is a good example. So if the hospital has a plan, great. And if the school has a plan, great. And if the community center in the center of the city has a plan, great. But how do they work together? And how do you then bring all of those plans together? And who oversees that ultimately?
Well, and that I think was a conversation we had after, you know, 9/11 in New York City and the different responders not being able to communicate. So I think there is a recognition that it is very important to not just, if you are, say, a hospital, not just do your disaster drill in a silo by yourself, but involve various parts of the community. And really, it's becoming more and more, I think, best practice for communities to have disaster drills that involve different sectors, you know, the fire department, the police department, the hospitals, the schools, and whatnot. That is more and more being seen as important because you need to know who you call and you need to be able to figure out what are the most likely, I think when you drill, you see what are the most likely things to go wrong or that you didn't anticipate when you didn't game it out together. So these are some of the key things, but you're absolutely right. It's not just you know, one organization or one household that is going to face the consequences of a disaster. You really need to coordinate. But on the other side, for those of you or people who are listening who might not be a senior leader in one of these organizations, it is very important. I kind of think of disaster preparedness on three levels. So you have your infrastructure, which is your, you know, your dams, your levees, your how well your buildings are built. Then you've got organizations and how they function and the leadership and, you know, sleep schedules and all sorts of aspects of how an organization can be made more resilient in a disaster. But then there are the individuals. And I, you know, you mentioned that I trained as a physician. Right. And I did emergency aid work for a number of years and then transitioned to journalism and have reported on a number of crises. And in every single situation that I've been in that's been an emergency, I have seen that individual, regular people, you and me, who are trapped in a disaster, who sort of where disaster finds them, you know, not the first responders, just the people who are in that area, become the de facto first responders. So the better prepared that each individual person can be to protecting your own life, protecting the lives of people in your family, or maybe the elderly lady who lives upstairs from you or down the street, the better the whole community will come out of a disaster. So it's all three levels, the infrastructure, the organizations, and the individuals that are important to disaster response.
So two large parts of what you're going to be talking about are ethics and social justice. So obviously, one of the points to get across is that all victims are created equal. How do we ensure that? And have we learned lessons from previous disasters?
Well, I would say yes and no. The book that I wrote, 5 Days at Memorial, is about Hurricane Katrina and a particular hospital where it's almost like a case study of how these issues can converge. This was a hospital where, you know, Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans about 10 years ago. The floodwaters rose after the levees failed, and the hospital was basically an island surrounded by water. And they had infrastructure vulnerabilities, i.e., even though they were in a known flood zone, their electrical systems were not protected from flooding. And so one of the biggest nightmares or worst-case scenarios you could imagine working in a modern American hospital, which is so technology-dependent, is to lose all power. And they lost all power, and they had to choose who do we save first when the helicopters come and they can take one or two people at a time, and there's, you know, 250 patients and 2,000 people. And then what to do about people who began to suffer and to die in the heat without their normal medical care. So lots of issues there. And so I think, you know, these are some of the social justice dimensions, which is that if you're not careful in a disaster, you can kind of perpetuate the same disadvantages that occur on a day-to-day basis can really be magnified. So, you know, again, with Katrina, we saw that people who didn't have a means of transportation, for example, couldn't get out of the city in time, even despite the warnings, the evacuation warnings. In this particular hospital, there were all sorts of issues that came up about fears of people in the neighborhood. There were, you know, some racial tensions that arose. There were, I think, sometimes in an emergency situation, we see the best of humanity. We see people, you know, volunteering and helping each other and saving lives, even, you know, regular people whose job that is. But you can also, in a time of stress, see people regressing and see people sort of turning to the situations or the groups with which they feel most comfortable. And that's sort of the more ugly side. And so sometimes in this case, there were fears of violence that led people to react in ways that that didn't promote, saving lives. And that was one of the great tragedies of Katrina.
That idea, though, of fear, it is hard to, I mean, you have a plan, you have it on paper, you know what you're going to do. And yet, when your life is at stake and things are going wrong and you're worried about your family and all of these things are converging, it is that fear has to be dealt into the equation, doesn't it? And not just on an individual level, but as a whole group, as an organizational level.
That you're absolutely right. And I think you said, you know, your plan's on paper. And that's precisely the point, is that it can't just be a plan on paper. If you don't sort of like game it out in advance, you won't realize things exactly as you said about unanticipated aspects of this, such as fear. And I think anybody who's been in the military knows that you plan very, very much. But you also plan for having to change that plan. You recognize that the situation will be different than what you can possibly anticipate. That's always the case. So you have to both be prepared and also be prepared to be flexible and be prepared to think clearly and think about matching resources and needs. You know, what is it that is happening at this exact moment? This is called situational awareness by disaster nerds. And how can I, you know, reevaluate what the needs are, what the assets are, and try to match those as best as possible? And I think, you know, one of the things when hospitals do actual disaster drills, and they have looked at, you know, how would we drill, for example, in a big emergency where we couldn't let everybody in. And I've spoken with and done some interviews around hospitals that have tried drilling for that, and they do see fear, even though it's not, you know, a real situation, that fear comes out. And I think it is useful to game it out, because if it is just a plan on a piece of paper that then nobody looks at for years and years, you're really not going to be ready on game day. It's really like sports. You wouldn't show up on game day without having practiced, and disaster preparedness is similar in that way.
Okay, so now for the final question and the hardest question that I think I will ask you, which is, so in that disaster preparedness, are you able to, given that you have put so much time and study into this matter, are you comforted by the resources, the development, and the practice that communities have for game day, or is this something that is lacking that we really need to pay attention to?
It's so localized, and all disaster preparedness really comes down first to the local. So as good as FEMA, you know, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, can get, it can never replace good local planning, which is so contextual. It has to be based on really local priorities, local needs, local assets. And then, you know, as those are overcome, then you rely on the county or the state or the federal resources and private resources, I should say. That's being more and more recognized, the very, important role that businesses and other private institutions can play, including hospitals. But so am I comforted? No, because I think getting back to how we started this conversation about just our human nature, the fact that we don't like to think about these things, and also about that concept of triage, which I mentioned can simply mean which patient gets on a helicopter first when you have all these patients who need help
right.
and not enough helicopters. But it's also about our own personal and institutional resources. How much do we invest in preparedness for rare but foreseeable and potentially catastrophic disasters, emergencies? And that is a question for society. And I think only when we think about the stakes of not preparing can we make an informed decision about that. And unfortunately, in many places in this country, we really aren't prepared, or we have big, big vulnerabilities that we just don't plan around. And my message is we need to face them, and we need to at least think about what will we do.
Sherry Fink is an award-winning journalist and author of the book 5 Days at Memorial. She will be the keynote speaker at the Disasters, Ethics, and Social Justice Conference at the University at Albany Uptown Campus in the Ballroom Campus Center at 12:30, again, this Friday, the 15th of April. You can find out more information by going to the New York State Writers Institute's website. The event is sponsored by UAlbany's College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity. And again, it's April 15th at 12:30 in the Campus Center. Sherry Fink, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.